from the Star Rental Sports Desk, your 950 KJR Sports Headlines.
5 o'clock hour sports headlines brought to you by VenueKings.com. Lots and lots and lots of NFL news. The Bucs have placed basically their entire special teams corps on the COVID list. Kicker Ryan Succop, punter Bradley Pinion, long snapper Zach Treiner will all likely miss this week's game. Raiders have placed wide receiver Henry Ruggs on the COVID list. They've also designated defensive end Tack McKinley to return from injured reserve. They've also signed defensive end Vic Beasley to the active roster. Bengals have placed star defensive tackle Geno Atkins on the injured reserve with a shoulder injury. The Bills designated wide receiver John Brown to return off the injured reserve list. The Seahawks also doing the same to tight end Greg Olsen, so he is eligible to come back. The 49ers designated tight end George Kittle to return from IR, and the Saints designated quarterback Drew Brees to return. Lions center Frank Ragnow doubtful for this week's game after, get this, fracturing his throat, an injury he played through last week. And the Division I Council passed the proposal in which all transfers are eligible to play this college hoop season. Don't forget, lots of dogs tonight on 950 KJR, 6 p.m. Tony Castricone with the Jimmy Lake Show. And then 8 o'clock tonight, Huskies and Montana play some hoops. Let's roll into the 5 o'clock hour. Hoping to hear from our man Chris Fetters, talking a little recruiting here. I was just kind of surfing through. I'm not a huge recruiting guy. I'm not even a big recruiting guy. I'm an interested follower in recruiting, just to see, you know, how my team stacks up, and I think that the Huskies have done a good job in the past about getting guys that are 2 stars, 3 stars, and turning them into the, you know, 4-star type college football players. That was one of Chris Peterson's great strengths. And joining us now, Chris Fetters, a guy that is into recruiting, dialed into recruiting, knows a million times more about it than I do, joining us here from Dogman.com at 24/7 Sports. How you doing, Chris?
Good, Dick. I didn't know why you guys wanted to talk to me. I'm getting all primed for the men's basketball game tonight against Montana.
There you go. Well, yeah, unfortunately, the Husky basketball season hasn't exactly started the way that we wanted it to, so we won't be breaking down a lot of Husky hoops versus Montana, but we will go into your wheelhouse, man, and that is the early signing day. And maybe kind of give us the genesis of this early signing day, why we're talking about recruiting in December when really we've always done it in February.
Well, first I'll give all the props to the 24/7 staff. Guys like Brandon Huffman, Greg Biggins, Blair Angulo, our guy Scott Eklund, who does it year-round, kills it. All those guys are the reasons why everyone tunes in during this mid-year period to make it work. Because, you know, bottom line is that people were committing earlier and earlier in the process. The coaches were sick and tired of basically maintaining recruits, maintaining commitments. And so they wanted to create a situation where guys could sign mid-year. There's mid-year signing periods in every other sport, NCAA athletics. There's a mid-year signing period for basketball, mid-year signing period for volleyball, softball, everybody. So why not for football? And so finally they kind of got around to it and made it happen. So now they have a mid-year signing period. Basically, it looks like it's probably the third Wednesday of every December. That Wednesday, Thursday, Friday becomes the quote-unquote mid-year signing period. And it's been really, really effective in terms of, I'd say 90% of the top guys out there are making their decisions, getting them over with. And especially in a situation right now when we're going through a pandemic, yeah, there's a ton of kids that are missing out because they have not been able to have in-home visits with coaches. Coaches have not been able to see them in person. There's been no official visits, really, unless you took them way, way, way long time ago. So that part of it's really sucked. But the good part about it is the education's still free. The offer's still on the table. These guys can lock up their future, and they can put it behind them and get ready for, you know, like in-state here in Washington. You can get ready for your senior season playing in the spring. You can get ready for those types of things. But your future's locked down. It's secure. You've signed a national letter of intent. It's binding, and you're ready to go. So I just think there were a lot of coaches that were like, I don't understand why we're waiting so long until February to do this signing thing when every other sport has a mid-year signing period. Let's get to it. I think it's been pretty successful.
How have teams recruited with no or little recent film, or is that going to impact the 2022 class more than it impacts the 2021 class?
Probably the scary part, Dick, is that it's probably going to impact the 2023 class more than anybody.
Wow.
Simply because they recruit that far in advance. Now, you're right, and Jimmy Lake talked about this at his signing day press conference. It really does affect 2022 in a lot of ways because you're missing out on all those guys who gain 4 or 5 inches in between their junior and senior years or between their sophomore and junior years or gain 20 pounds or all of a sudden kind of fit into their body, so to speak. And they all of a sudden now their coordination, the athleticism, all the things that you were expecting to see once the kind of the maturation process took hold was going to happen. And yeah, you don't get any of that on the field. You get guys working out. You get guys doing drills on the field. You get a lot of 7-on-7 work because there have been some 7-on-7 tournaments. So people can look at that kind of stuff, but it's playing football in underwear, man. I mean, you're not playing pads.
Yeah.
You're not doing the kinds of things that you would be doing in a regular football game for the most part. I mean, you're running around a lot of routes, but what are the linemen doing? Linemen aren't doing anything. So yeah, it's going to hamstring a lot of people. But ironically enough, there's a lot, like Washington, I think, still has probably 40, 50 Division I scholarships out already for the 2022 class. They keep offering guys. They offered someone for 2023 today. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's going to hurt, no doubt about it. But it's really going to hurt those guys who were really hoping to kind of be in that late bloomer category. The guys that Washington loves to develop, those guys that have the physical attributes that you want to see, but maybe have not been able to show it because they weren't quite there on the field before they gained all that weight or got bigger, stronger, faster, that kind of thing. That will affect it. But the scary part about it is, again, they've done enough homework in these future classes already to pave a lot of that way so that they aren't wholly affected by it. But there's no doubt there's going to be a certain segment of it that's going to really kind of throw this thing sideways. And for those kids, it's really unfortunate. I feel bad for them.
How much do you see the Washington ranking changing and the numbers that they have committed changing between now and February? You got them number 5 in the Pac-12, which is obviously lower than last year, lower than what you have projected next year, number 30 in America. So not your typical Washington, you know, mid-teens type ranking that they're normally in. But can that change, and how much do you think that will change between now and February?
Well, Jimmy Lake certainly left a possibility that they could add numbers to this thing, because they have to get to their 85 number, and I haven't looked at the total number. They're really close. But Jacob Sermon, the quarterback, is now in the transfer portal. That's one less number that's against them. So, you know, they're going to probably have room to add if they need to add. And Jimmy Lake said there's attrition that will happen from now until February. Guys are going to want to turn pro. Guys are going to want to, you know, explore other options like Jacob is. So there's going to be numbers to be had. Could they add guys down the road? Yes. And then we also have that small segment. It is a small segment, but there are a few really elite recruits out there. JT Tuimoloau from Eastside Catholic, for instance, 5-star kid in state. He's looking at Washington, Oregon, USC, Ohio State, Alabama. That's his final 5. You know, if they pick up a guy like that, now all of a sudden things look a lot rosier in terms of those numbers. One of the reasons why the numbers aren't looking as rosy as they did maybe the last 2 or 3 years is because they have a small class. And because they have a small class is because they haven't had the kind of attrition that they would have needed in order to boost those numbers up and then all of a sudden start looking better. But I will give a flip side to that, that if you look just on the numbers of rating per recruit, Washington's 3rd in the Pac-12 and they're top 20 nationally. So it's not all bad. And then in terms of the current recruits, the current guys that have signed, in terms of the entire Pac-12, Dick, Washington's the only team in the current Pac-12 that has a 5-star kid currently signed to their program, and that's Sam Heward from Kennedy, Damon Heward's son. So, you know, they have certainly some things where they've hit and certainly some things that they have missed, no doubt about it, but I don't think it's quite as bad as people are making out.
Well, about JT, I mean, should I still hold out reasonable hope, or does he just have Washington on that list because they're Washington, they're the hometown team, and he just wants to make them feel good?
Well, I think if you listen to the people that are really tight to the involvement and the recruitment of JT Tuimoloau, it would be the latter. It's a guy who has really always kind of looked national. And, you know, it's going to be one of those things where if he looks out of the Pac-12 footprint, it's just like Emeka Egbuka did from Steilacoom when he signed with Ohio State. It's just one of those things now where we're seeing it's not just necessarily a Washington issue. It's become a Pac-12 issue because there's the number one kid in the 24/7 recruiting rankings right now is a kid by the name of Corey Foreman from Southern California. There's a chance that Corey Foreman could stay home and go to USC, but he was initially recruited to Clemson. If he leaves the Pac-12 footprint as well, now you're seeing something, I don't know if we'd want to call it something of an epidemic failure, but we're seeing something that's really a trend that's really bad for the Pac-12 footprint, where you're having the top guys from the West Coast leaving this footprint and going to national programs like Alabama, like Ohio State, like Clemson, you know, some of these other big programs, big-time programs. So it's like the Blue Bloods. They keep getting better and better and better, and the gap is starting to widen a little bit. But it is unfortunate, especially in a season like this, Dick, where you had 3 5-star can't-miss top prospects in the top 12 overall nationally, and Washington only gets one of them. That people will see that, and they'll just say Washington failed. They won't look at the rest. They'll just say it's a failure. That's it. That's fine. I get it. I totally get it. But, you know, typically when it comes to these types of things and you want to see some development, if you're going to pick one guy that you have to get, to me, you got to get the quarterback, and they got the quarterback.
Yes, they did, and he could be an impact, and he could be an absolute program changer. Not that they need to turn around this program, but he could take them to the next level if he's as good as the stars show. Hey, thanks a lot, Chris. Enjoy the basketball game tonight.
Okay, thanks, Dick.
You bet. Chris Fetter's joining us. Dogman.com has got everything you need. 247sports.com. Washington, the good and the bad. I mean, this is the – you take the good with the bad in this year's recruiting for Washington. The good is what he just mentioned. I mean, they got the number one quarterback in America. And let's hope he turns out to be the number one quarterback in America for the next 4 or 5 seasons. And they got, like he said, per player – they got top 15 recruiting class. It's just a smaller class. The bad news is Egbuka and probably Tua Malau, Julian Simon, not going to Washington. That is a big-time bummer. What's not a bummer is our friend Kevin Harlan's going to join us coming up next right here on 950 KJ.
On app.
The Chiefs bench is delirious. The crowd with arms in the air.
Coming to you live from the Elliott Avenue studios of Sports Radio KJL.
Rolls out of the pocket, sideline throw, caught, goal line.
We take a look inside the NFL with CBS Sports and Westwood One's Kevin Harlan. Brought to you by the Emerald Queen Casino. The beautiful, brand-new Emerald Queen Casino, located on I-5 in Tacoma, is now open. Come check it out today.
Over the shoulder catch of the pylon. It's a touchdown. It's a touchdown.
Now with Kevin Harlan, here's Dave Softy Moeller.
5 on the line, shotgun snap, 4th and 5, runs out of the pocket, past the hash mark on the numbers, downfield throws, it's caught at the 20, wide open is Brown, he goes from the 10 to the 5, it's a touchdown! Baltimore comes right back and they get the touchdown pass of 44 yards!
Wow!
Oh my goodness!
You're right, you can't make this stuff up!
This is just amazing!
Amazing, a great word. Our thanks to the beautiful new Emerald Queen Casino, which is pretty amazing in itself. But Kevin Harlan joins me here on 950 KJR after, for my money, Kevin, the game of the year in the NFL, and it just so happened to be on national radio, national TV primetime. What a ball game you got to call between the Ravens and the Browns.
Boy, it was, Dick. Great to be on with you, and it was a fantastic game. We knew it was going to be good. Both teams were playing well the week before. Baltimore had gotten some healthy guys back, including their quarterback, and beaten Dallas. Every game for them is like a playoff game because they're digging out of kind of an ordinary first 10, 12 games of the season, so they've really had to step it up here, and they certainly did in Cleveland. They did the week before against Dallas. And they've been hit by COVID, so their schedule's been all over the place. Very, very disruptive season for the Ravens. And then you had Cleveland, which has been playing very well. You know, Mayfield right now is living up to his number one overall draft position. They've got the best running game in pro football. They've got stars on defense. They're playing great. And they have 13,000 fans in the stadium, which gives a little bit of a – nice ambiance and feel of emotion. And it was one of those cold, windy Cleveland Lake Erie nights, a division game, meaningful December. I mean, it had all the elements, and we were not disappointed. It was truly great. Back and forth they went. And the problem is, like that touchdown pass you heard right there, that was one of about 15 great plays maybe in the last, you know, quarter of the game that all meant something. Because right after that, the Browns went downfield and scored, and they were on top. And then Baltimore got it back, and they came back and got the eventual game-winning field goal. And it just made for a very enjoyable evening where you just had no idea who was going to end up on top at the end.
And we also had the off-the-field drama as well with Lamar Jackson and whether or not he was going to come back into that football game. What were you being told in the booth about Lamar Jackson's status?
Well, we heard cramps initially, but not like until he had been back in there about 5 or 10 minutes. We thought, for him to leave at this stage of the game, it's got to be pretty significant. And it was a cold night, so you wouldn't think cramps. And Kurt Warner, who I was working with, even said during a break, is cramps on a 32-degree night when the wind chill makes it about 20? That doesn't make any sense. But sure enough, for him, it did. Now, remember, he was in bed with COVID, and he was hit hard. I mean, he got waylaid and had just come up the week before, played against Dallas, but maybe he hasn't got his full physical powers yet. Maybe he doesn't have that deep well to reach into at this time of the season because he's battled the virus. So as it turns out, he had cramps, but he came back out there at the right time because his backup, you know, hurt his knee significantly and had to be carried off the field. And they put in Jackson again. He didn't know what he was going to do, and sure enough, he comes in and throws. When it looked like he was going to run, he throws a touchdown pass. It was a play designed to the right. He was coming toward the sideline. He was buying time, and in 9 times out of 10, Lamar is going to run that ball. But he must have been stunned, like everybody was, that his receiver had that kind of room in the middle of the field at about the 20, and just thought, well, I've got to go that way, and sure enough, he did, and they went on top, and then Cleveland came back, and Mayfield, I think, went 75 yards in like a minute or something like that, and he ran it in, and they take the lead, tied it, and that just really made it, you know, so eventful in so many ways. Doing games like this, and you would think they're always like this in the month of December, but, you know, and it's not rare, but it's uncommon that you would get a game in a division, two teams looking for a playoff spot and, you know, facing each other when they pretty much got all the principal players healthy and on the field. And that made it good. That made it really, really good.
You know, I feel bad for Trace McSorley because he had a pass drop that was right on the money that would have been a first down. So at least he put the throw where he needed to put it. But it just appeared that the dog pound was just smelling blood when Trace McSorley came into the game. It just felt like the entire momentum of that game switched. And then when he went down with injury, I mean, I don't think it goes too far as to say that injury may have saved Baltimore's season, because I don't think Lamar comes back in if McSorley doesn't get hurt.
He may not have. He was already running out. I think he was watching the game in the locker room. He was getting an IV, and I don't know if it was when McSorley went down that he quickly, you know, yanked the needle, ran back out, and was ready to go. I'm not sure if he was already in the process of coming out when McSorley was already in there and quarterbacking. But if he was available, there's no doubt that John Harbaugh would have certainly decided to put him back in. I don't know. And here's the other thing too, and it's kind of I'm a little hesitant to say it. But if they had, because the backup, I don't even know who the backup to the backup was. There was no third quarterback open and eligible and on the roster. It was just those two, and Jackson doesn't miss games. So I don't know if they told McSorley, stay down. Stay down. We got to get Jackson back out here. Stay down. You know, people have been known to do that. There is no question that if there's a relief pitcher in baseball, if there's an injury on the field, if there's you know, a team is moving and the defense has no timeouts and a player, you know, falls down and you know, is saying, I've got cramps. A lot of times they're doing it so the defense can catch their breath or there's an injury or something or whatever. And I'm not saying that was the case, but if it would come out years later that McSorley, who was injured, and he was, yeah. It was just, you know, I haven't seen in the wake what the injury was. I just know it was to a knee and looked to be in significant pain. When he was down, they may have been said, stay down another 15 seconds. We got to get the other quarterback out here. That stuff like that, I think, happens more than we all think, and it may have happened even in that game. Regardless, Jackson was on his way out. We saw what happened. And not only did he get the touchdown that gave him the lead, he also got the touchdown to put him in a position to kick the game-winning field goal.
With maybe the greatest kicker of all time. I mean, Justin Tucker.
Yep, right.
I want Justin Tucker doing my emergency surgery, man. That guy is just as cool as there has ever been at that position.
He's money. He has the highest made field goal percentage in the history of pro football, 91%. You know, and he's money. He's nails. He doesn't get flustered. I spend time before every game charting the kickers for each team. I want to see which end of the stadium they like best, where they're having their most pregame success. The pregame warm-ups can tell you a lot. For instance, when I'm up there, I like to watch the routes that the wide receivers are running. Those are usually their favorite routes to run. I watch the kickers and the punters, and I watch the kickers and what hash they like to be on, how they're looking at the wind, what their final distance is on their final kick. And on this particular night, before the game, about an hour and a half, I'm watching Justin Tucker, and he is using that little holder where you don't need a person. Mm-hmm. It's like a little stand that will hold the ball. And he was out there before anybody else was on the field, and he was teeing the ball up with this artificial stand, this little metal three-prong stand, holding the ball up at the 50-yard line for a 60-yard try, and he did it at both ends. He kicked it from the 50-yard line. He kicked it from the he made the 60-yard field goal to the left, and he spun around. He got it again, and he kicked it to the right, and he had made them in both ends. And we had said his career long is 61, and on a night where the wind is blowing off of Lake Erie at about, you know, 14 to 18 miles an hour, and the temperature with the wind chills about 21, 20 degrees, he was making 60-yard field goals before the game and had room to spare.
Wow.
And so this one from 55 was well within what he was doing. He had made them from both ends, as opposed to the kicker for the Browns, who was shorter at one end than he was at the other. And that's how we were gauging our wind. So sometimes those little things play into the broadcast. Sometimes they don't. This was a night where you had a pretty good kicker in Justin Tucker, and we had that information available and knew that he had had confidence with that kick in the pregame.
Well, he's the best, and you're the best. That's why you're the best, because you research kickers before the game as well. Kevin Harlan joining us, brought to you by the Emerald Queen Casino. You know, the probably the most forgettable game in the NFL this week involved our Seattle Seahawks, and they took care of the Jets without problem, 40-3, and so there's the conversation of, you know, do you side on, was it just the Jets, and that's the only reason the Seahawks look good, or do you side on the fact that, hey, this was the biggest beatdown that anybody had ever handed the Jets this year, and the Seahawks got a lot of problems fixed. So kind of which side of the fence should Seahawks fans be on there?
Well, a little bit of both. I do think the Hawks are trending in the right direction, and that was a game where, you know, listen, the Jets have become a novelty every week. They're a train wreck. They're a car wreck, and it's like you can't help but watch because you just don't know what like is going to happen to them again. So every week you've got to, as you're going across the dial, you usually stop on the Jets because you go, all right, what are they doing this week? You know, they haven't won. Like are they going to get their first win in this game? Like, what's going to happen? So you are never, and I think teams are like that too. They're just a little bit leery of who they're facing. The week before, the Raiders had that incredibly emotional walk-off touchdown pass to end the game, which forced them to fire the defensive coordinator. and the Jets were completely demoralized. And as it turned out, with yet another trip across the country for the Jets, they showed that there was a residual effect. And I don't think they were playing certainly their best football, as we've seen all season long. That being said, you can't take any team for granted, and the Seahawks certainly weren't going to do that. I'm sure Pete all week long had said, you just never know what you're going to get. This team is desperate. They need a win. They need something good to happen. Mm-hmm. All it takes is one play to light their fuse. Don't let them light their fuse. And they didn't.
Yeah.
And they turned out with a huge win.
Kevin Harlan joining us, brought to you by the Emerald Queen Casino on a weekly basis. And I saw a great tweet from your daughter, Olivia. 3 games, 3 days, 3 networks. She kind of snuck down into the basement last night and took a video of you doing the open of NBA on TNT last night. Is that going to be the norm for you during basketball season? You going to be in your basement?
Well, it looks like for the foreseeable future, until this virus is under control and fans are let in. You know, the number one thing is our company, Warner Media, Turner Broadcasting, they are concerned about the health and welfare of their employees, which I am one. And much like CBS, they go above and beyond to protect us, and that we all appreciate that. Our families in particular appreciate that. So for the time being, for the NBA, we are going to be at home. And so Time Warner, which is now Warner Media, sent up some engineers from CNN in Atlanta, and they've been busy over the last 4 or 5 months setting up the home studios of all their news people, not only in the U.S., but internationally, and traveling around the world and coast to coast to set up all their correspondents and all their anchors in home studios. And that has now been kind of, that box has been checked, and they've pretty much, from the Sanjay Guptas to whoever they've got, Don Lemon and Wolf Blitzer, they're all in a position where they can broadcast from home for their own safety. And now they have turned to us because the NBA is starting. So on Saturday morning, they flew up 2 guys, and they left last night at midnight. They've been setting up this studio out of our basement, and to the point where we've got a direct line to the Atlanta headquarters. And I can, last night I worked with Grant Hill. He was at his home in Orlando. I'm in Kansas City, and literally we're a couple guys in our mom's basement talking basketball. And that's kind of really what we are. And that's what we were last night. And we were getting some bugs out. They had not done it. Marv Albert is in New York. He is actually going to a studio and doing it, and Chris Webber is going to a studio, but Reggie Miller in L.A. will go to a studio. I elected that, hey, if I'm going to be home and not have to travel, I'm not going to drive 20, 30 minutes. I'm going to take advantage of being home, and so I just put it in our house. I thought it was going to be a simple project, and as my wife looked at me with her eyes rolling the other day, this was not really a simple project, was it? I mean, this required, I mean, cameras and lighting and fiber optic communication and multiple two-way screens and a quad screen and, you know, headset things and sound and just like all this stuff. So I am in my basement, and they've got a camera right there, and I am as if I'm in an arena, and it will get better as we go along. We've never done it before like this, and we're learning as we go along. But it is fascinating, and it's not really us that you see on the air that is the end result. It's the people that do and put and plug and build and do all these things to make it happen, all these technicians who are just geniuses. They should be sending people to Pluto and not coming in our basements and setting up TV studios. So it really is nice. I did not know my daughter was doing that last night. I woke up, and someone from CBS had sent me the Sports Illustrated article, and I go, where'd they get this? And then I found out that my daughter Olivia, who's in the business, had secretly gone on there and taped around the corner. So, just a little peek at what we're going through. But listen, this is, in the grand scheme of things, this is a breeze, and we're lucky to be able to do it and stay safe. And I thank our companies for putting us in that position.
Absolutely. I'm glad you don't have to travel and you can stay safe. Now, just don't let them give you 150 basketball games to do in 90 days just because you're in your basement. I mean, don't let them overwork you, all right, Kevin?
That might happen. We have to be careful about that, Dick. I'm going to pass that along. And a good friend in Seattle told me to tell you, let's watch the number of gigs here. Let's make sure we keep it at a very breathable position. But it's a fun time of year. You know, the beginning of the NBA season opens a week next Tuesday night, and we'll have the game from Los Angeles as the Lakers will get their rings, celebrate their championship, and the NBA will be off and running on a shortened 72-game season.
Wow, great stuff. Hey, Kevin, we'll talk to you next week. Thanks so much.
Dick, thank you. Always a pleasure. Happy holidays.
You bet. That's Kevin Harlan, brought to you by the Emerald Queen Casino. Be back right after this, right here on 950K.
Snoqualmie Casino.
Now back to Softy and Dick on your new home for the Huskies. Sports Radio 950, KJR.
Just moments away from Tony Castricone bringing you the Jimmy Lake Show, live from Montlake on Sports Radio 950 KJR, your home for the Dogs. And then at 8 o'clock tonight, a busy night for Tony. He's going to be walking over from Husky Stadium, walking over and doing the Husky basketball game as they take on Montana here on 950 KJR at 8 o'clock tonight. You know, we started the show, Jackson, talking about the best things about 2020, the worst things about 2020. And I just thought of another thing that we might not be able to wrap our arms around now. But when we look back, maybe 3-4 years down the road at signing day of 2020, yeah, I'm wondering what we'll think and what type of memories we have of the number one quarterback in America signing with the University of Washington, and what type of impact Sam Heward's going to have on this football team, because that is something that you can hang your hat on as a Husky fan, regardless of what the rest of this. And the rest is good. Don't get me wrong. I mean, Chris Fetters came on. The rest of the recruiting class is good. It's just not as big, not as heralded as it's been the last couple of years. But having the number one quarterback, it's the most important position in sports, isn't it?
I mean, Dick, let's just say that number again. Number one
in America.
When was the last time the Huskies brought in the number one positional player at any position? I mean, I'm not huge into recruiting, so maybe I missed something.
Well, I'm thinking, his uncle Brock was Gatorade National Player of the Year, so I mean, that's the type of.
So long ago.
I don't even know if Brock was number one overall at his position.
So listen, this kid is numero uno in the nation at quarterback. This is the type of guy that we talk about. Quarterbacks make their receivers better, and the Huskies are, lacking some dynamic receivers here in recent years. This is a guy who can come in and make, no matter what receivers you have on the field, he's going to be able to make them better. I cannot wait to see what this kid does.
No, it's going to be a lot of fun, and the door is wide open. I don't want to throw him out there before he's ready. There's no question about that. But, you know, we didn't see anything from Dylan Morris this year. We didn't see bad things from Dylan Morris, but at the same time, we didn't see, like we talked about yesterday, we didn't see anything from Dylan Morris that made any Husky fan go, oh my God, we got ourselves a first team all Pac-12 player for the next couple years, an All-American type guy. We saw a really solid job done by a redshirt freshman. Yeah. That's what we saw this year, and I was not disappointed at all. My expectations were probably lower of Dylan Morris than what he showed on the football field, particularly as the games moved on, and he didn't get to play a lot of games. So, you know, I give Dylan a solid B plus for his performance this year as Washington Husky quarterback. So I don't want to denigrate anything that he did. But having said that, you look at what Sam Heward brings, and I've seen him numerous times playing football. I've seen him numerous times playing basketball. He's got that kind of it factor with the team, kind of, you know, follows him. He's definitely a leader on the field and on the court. And I think what's important too, for a kid that has this many accolades tied to him, and the five-star thing, and the, you know, All-American type thing, he's got his dad and he's got his uncle to lean on.
Yep.
And that is just so valuable to have. I mean, most of these guys that are five-star guys, yeah, maybe they had an uncle that played, you know, football someplace else, but these two guys played the same position at the same school that he is playing at. He knows exactly what to expect. at Montlake. And from Husky Nation, he knows exactly what Husky fans expect of him.
It's invaluable to have that experience and to already be looked at. I think you're right in terms of the team already follows. I mean, I'm sure that there are guys who are on the squad right now who are coming in next year who already are aware that they're getting the number one quarterback in the nation. I mean, that it's not any secret at all. So he's already going to step in. And I think your point of Dylan Morris, I think it's perfect because Dylan is a serviceable confidence 100%. If we have to bring him in, he has the chance to win a game quarterback who can back up Sam Heward. But kind of like Jake Browning when he first came in, and I was of the opinion that when Jake came in, it's day one, we need to start this guy. Kind of like I thought we could have done with Garbers this year.
Right, because you didn't have a very good stable when Jake Browning came.
Exactly. So you just start the kid right away and let him develop all three years if the kid skyrocket. Rockets like we think he will, right? So you give him as much time as possible as the starting quarterback of the Dogs, because then, let's say they're in his junior year, maybe he takes him to a Final Four.
Yeah, and the fact that he's been eating, sleeping, breathing X's and O's football since the time he was two. I mean, that separates him. I mean, it separates guys like Clay Millen, like Cale Millen. It separates guys like Sam Heward, because most of those quarterbacks don't have dads that played the game at the professional level, and that is really, really big. All right, we'll talk some recruiting. Tony Castricone with Jimmy Lake. We'll talk, obviously, about the disappointment of not playing this week in the Pac-12 Championship, but also about the Dogs to come. It was recruiting day, and Tony and Jimmy are going to sit down for the Jimmy Lake Show next, right here on 950.